Hello, welcome to the Middle East Today, coming to you from Press TV's international headquarters, right here in Tehran, Iran. I'm Marzieh Hashemi. Some 3 weeks have gone by since it was announced that a unilateral ceasefire would take place in Israel's war on the Gaza Strip. After 22 days of fierce attacks on the most populous strip of land on the face of the earth, a slowing in the fighting took place. However, there continues to be sporadic helicopter attacks and bombings by Israel on Gaza, as well as rocket firing from Gaza to Israel. Some observers say the Israeli attacks are aimed at getting political concessions from Hamas, while some link the attacks to the upcoming Israeli elections. And there are others who think that there is no link at all. Though there is an extreme need for food, medicine, and supplies to enter the Gaza Strip, they have been slow in making their way to the area as the Israelis continue to refuse to open the borders into Gaza. Egypt has also denied fully opening the Rafah crossing and has only allowed limited supplies in the area. Meanwhile, a recent poll indicates the war on Gaza has boosted Hamas. The group would be the winner of Palestinian elections if they were held today. The poll also indicated that Ismail Haniyeh is the most trusted Palestinian politician. While the political ball keeps bouncing around, what is certain is the fact that for now 1.5 million hostages are being held with the most limited supplies, while the chess game of political wrangling continues. And I'd like to welcome my guest today from San Francisco, California, West Coast Director of Answer Coalition, Richard Becker. And from London by phone, Communications Director of Republican Abroad UK, Charlie Wolf. And also by phone from Taiwan, the editor of the Foreign Policy Journal, Jeremy Hammond. Welcome all of you to the program. I'd like to jump into this with Mr. Becker. Israel continues to attack the Gaza Strip despite the tenuous ceasefire, saying it wants to destroy the tunnels on the Rafah border. Do you think Israel continues the attacks to get political concessions from Hamas?
I think that what Israel is doing, both in the offensive and in the siege that has been going on now for nearly 3 years, is inflicting collective punishment on the Palestinian people in the hopes that they can destroy all resistance to Israeli control of the region. The United States and the Egyptian government, led by Hosni Mubarak, are backing Israel in this. This is part of a greater strategy, greater strategic initiative in the Middle East, which is aimed at destroying all movements and governments which are resisting the U.S. Strategic proposal for what should happen to this region, that is, U.S. strategic domination of the entire Middle East. We have to point out that with all the horrors that have been inflicted, and they are true horrors, on the population in Gaza in 2008-2009, like the horrors that were inflicted on the people of Lebanon in 2006, the outcome of this has not been a victory for the U.S.-Israeli initiative. In fact, it really constitutes a strategic defeat for them. But Israel, the Israeli leaders, who have committed great war crimes, are doing this both at this moment, intensifying the siege against Gaza for the sake of their election ambitions, but also seeking to gain what they could not gain despite the military offensive that they've conducted in late December and into January.
Okay, let me get Mr. Wolf in here. Mr. Wolf, Mr. Becker has just referred to the upcoming Israeli elections. Do you think that the Israel's attacks on Gaza and pressures now that are taking place have anything to do with the upcoming election, the pressures that they're putting on Hamas? Do you think any of that has anything to do with the upcoming elections?
I don't think so, not totally. Listening to Mr. Becker for a second there, I almost thought that George W. Bush was still the president of the United States. I think what the Israelis are doing is patently clear. They have finally, after 5 years, have had enough, and the court is the ball is now in Hamas's court on how they want to play this. If they want to continue to terrorize their neighbors, then they will be held accountable. And it's not, to use his phrase, I don't think it's collective punishment. It's a government taking responsibility for its people. If you can't control the rocket fire, and the rocket fire does still continue, for instance, on February 1st, I'm reading here, four Qassam rockets and 14 mortars hitting the Western Negev. If this can't be controlled, then Israel is going to strike back, as I think it should do. Their strikes are targeted at the tunnels, and I think the rest of the Arab world is starting to come to the realization that Hamas is trouble for the Palestinian people. And you look at statements that Mahmoud Abbas has made. You even look at statements Hillary Clinton has made. And in some respects, that really hasn't changed much from the Bush administration. Hamas has the opportunity and did when they won the elections. People say, oh, well, Israel and America didn't like the outcome of the election. That wasn't true. Israel and America said, okay, the Palestinians have spoken. Actually, my sources in the State Department said that they welcomed Hamas winning the election, hoping that maybe they would act responsibly as a government.
That's completely false.
They haven't, and now they may pay the consequences.
Go ahead, Mr. Becker. You wanted to comment?
On February 14th, 2006, Haaretz newspaper, a leading newspaper in Israel, carried an article saying that Dov Weissglass, the top advisor to Ehud Olmert, said at that time, we're going to put the Palestinians on a diet. They're going to get thinner, but they won't die. And this was in a meeting of the Security Cabinet. In other words, immediately after the election in 2006, which Hamas won, the United States, Israel, and the European Union all began using food as a weapon, cutting off food supplies, cutting off medical supplies to the Palestinians as a form of punishment, and particularly in Gaza. Mr. Wolf, in fact, sounds like George W. Bush, putting the blame on those who are really the victims, the Palestinians who have suffered from the oppression and continue to suffer the oppression of the Israeli apartheid state.
No, well, Mr. Becker, you don't know the players. That's the shame here. And for all the crowing we have heard over the last several weeks about the Palestinians, especially from the international left, which I assume you represent, it has nothing to do with the Palestinians for people like yourself. It's a hatred of Israel. It really is. And it's a shame because if you really cared about the Palestinian people, then you would know that the enemy here is Hamas. They were popularly elected. I grant you that. They then had a coup in the unity government several years ago when people, Palestinians, were being thrown out of fifth-story windows. No one seems to have been protesting about that. During this recent incursion, the fact that some 35 members of Fatah were murdered, and this is still going on. There's some 700, I believe, that were kneecapped. So the problem here is Hamas. And it's a very simple equation here again. If you want to be a government, and this is what Hillary Clinton said, I think it was fair enough. She said exactly what was said 3-4 years ago when Hamas came to power. If you will recognize past agreements, if you will recognize the state of Israel, if you will act like a government, then you will be treated like a government. It's as simple as that.
Okay, let me get
Mr. You're just a spokesperson for the Israeli government's point of view.
Okay.
Well, listen, if you want to throw out homonyms, we can play that.
Let me get Mr. Hammond in here, please.
Even though I was introduced to
Mr.
Wolf,
let me get Mr. Hammond in here, please. Mr. Hammond, Hamas says the terms of a proposed ceasefire with Israel do not match the success it had achieved in Israel's war on Gaza. Israel, the U.S., and the EU trying to isolate and ignore Hamas. But do you think that this can continue? Do you think that they can continue to ignore Hamas in this current situation?
Well, if the question is, will they? Yes, I think they will continue to. If the question is, should they? No, I think they absolutely should engage Hamas as the elected representatives of the Palestinian people.
So what do you see the results being if they continue to ignore Hamas?
I think the results will be that, the so-called peace process will be put on hold, indefinitely, while Israel continues to expand settlements in the West Bank, continues attacks, likely, in Gaza, continues to kill civilians in Gaza, continues the siege of Gaza, which is I don't know how anyone can deny that it's collective punishment, and it's pretty well understood. Even in the Western media, that's what it is. You can read in the New York Times saying, basically that they don't use the words collective punishment, but they just say, to put pressure. This is the euphemism that they use, to put pressure on Hamas. That's the point of the siege. So, you know, that's just a euphemism for collective punishment. So let's face the facts of what's really going on the ground. Also, the other gentleman mentioned, you know, Hamas is responsible, and one of the reasons he mentioned was a coup. But it was, let's also look at another fact. It was a counter-coup. The U.S. was involved with Fatah and Abbas's PA in trying to basically dissolve the Hamas government that was democratically elected.
Mr. Hammond, I want to get your perspective. I'm sorry. Let me get your perspective on Mr. Wolf's comment that he said basically now the ball is in Hamas's court, whether they want to continue with what he calls terrorism or not. Where do you see the ball in this game right now? The ball is in whose court?
Well, both parties are responsible for their own actions, and I think to say that the ball is in one person's court or the other misses the point. I agree with the gentleman that Hamas should stop firing rockets. Not only do I agree that it's a crime, but I agree, I mean, just that aside, it's stupid. It's a stupid tactic, and it only results in, you know, Hamas has received criticism from other Arab governments for doing so, not only Hamas, but other Palestinian militant groups, because the predictable response will be overwhelming, disproportionate Israeli military action. So I agree with that, but, you know, that takes full responsibility off of Israel for its actions, which are enormously disproportionate. They're not even comparable, the scale of the crimes being committed.
Mr. Becker, let me get you in on this. What's your take on that, with Hamas continuing sending rockets to Israel? Do you think that that's the main root of this problem, or how do you see it?
No, of course not. I mean, what broke the ceasefire, which started in June, it was negotiated in June for 6 months, on the election day in the United States, and I don't think this was coincidence, Israel killed 7 people in Gaza. It was a targeted assassination. And the next day, they completely sealed the borders into Gaza. Gaza is a giant prison in many ways. It's sealed off. The people, because 70% of the people are refugees driven from their homes or the descendants of those driven from their homes in 1948 to make way for the State of Israel, have depended and have had to depend on foreign aid, on UN, United Nations Relief and Works Agency, for education, for medical supplies, and for food. And that is a direct outgrowth and a recognition by the United Nations of its responsibility for the creation of the State of Israel at the expense of the Palestinians. So when you seal the borders, you are inflicting collective punishment. And this has been done now, not for a few months, not for a few weeks. It's been done for 3 years since Hamas democratically won an election on January 25th, 2006. That collective punishment started immediately. When the people resist against that, I don't think they're the ones who are causing the crisis, and it really turns reality upside down to claim that they are.
I would like to add something to that.
Go ahead, please.
Well, he mentioned the November 4th attack, not only airstrike, there was an incursion into Gaza. And that was, you know, people refer to that as being the actual initial violation of the ceasefire, and that was the most major violation. But I just want to point out that Israel never observed the ceasefire to begin with. The entire first week of the ceasefire, which began on June 19th, United Nations, just a little bit over 1 week since it began, pointed out that Israel had repeatedly violated the ceasefire with soldiers firing upon Gazans attempting to reach their own land repeatedly, and a number of people were injured in those shooting incidents. There was an 18-year-old Gazan individual. I believe he might have been a member of Hamas, but he was unarmed, and he was killed by Israeli soldiers who fired across the border into Gaza. So there were repeated violations by Israel of the ceasefire. At the same time, it escalated its actions against Hamas and other militant groups in the West Bank, including an assassination of an Islamic Jihad member, which resulted in the first violation by Islamic Jihad. They retaliated, in June, and Israel basically declared that it would hold Hamas responsible for the actions of any other militant group. Hamas did not fire any rockets from the beginning of the ceasefire until the November 4th incident. And they had a limited response to the Israeli incursion, the attack that killed, as the other gentleman said, six or seven people. So this is the point. You know, Israel never agreed to the ceasefire, but never honored the ceasefire to begin with. And it was clear from the beginning that their intention was to try to provoke an incident that would result in retaliation by militant groups in Gaza to firing rockets. And it was pretty clear from the beginning that their intention was to invade Gaza. I wrote on June 30th that was their intention and that the ceasefire would result in Israeli military action against Gaza. It was pretty easily predictable. I think it was obvious that was their intention.
Okay, Mr. Wolf, back to collective punishment that Mr. Becker had just brought up, and he brought out a few examples. I have two questions. One, with the examples that he brought up, basically talking about the blockade and how long that it has been in place, do you not think that is collective punishment? And also, Hamas says now that it will free the Israeli soldier, Gilad Shalit, that it had captured in exchange for the release of some Palestinian prisoners held by Israel. But Israel is linking the opening of the Gaza crossing to Shalit's release. I want to know, is it logical to tie the fate of one person to the fate of 1.5 million people? And do you not see this as a form of collective punishment?
No, I don't. I think if there's anything here, maybe call it collective consequence. And it's unfortunate for the Palestinian people, but you have to look at this from the Israeli view of what are they to do. The reason the borders were closed was because people were coming in with dynamite strapped to their bodies and going into pizza parlors and blowing up mothers and children and innocent civilians. And the Israelis had to do something to protect their civilians, to protect their citizens, and that's paramount. In response, actually, very quickly to Mr. Becker.
That's why they're blocking food?
Mr. Becker isn't really coming forward with all of the facts here when he talked about, for instance, the November 4th incident. What he failed to mention was the reason the Israelis went into Gaza and they killed those seven people was because they were militants who were tunneling their way into Israel.
According to Israel.
Another kidnap event.
According to Israel.
Former President Carter laughably called it a defensive tunnel. So, you know, let's give the full story here. But again, you know, I do feel for the Palestinian people. It's not a prison, as Mr. Becker says. I mean, one only has to look back to between the two intifadas when the Palestinian people or their government are happy to act to the standards of the world community and not to take on acts of terrorism. The Israelis are very happy to trade and employ them. Standards went up. The GDP went up, I think it was 25% between the two intifadas. Mortality rates went down. Life expectancy went up. So, you know, again, this all goes right back to Hamas. It's a very simple solution. If they want to make peace, the Israelis have been
and so did the settlements
talking
go
about
up.
Peace day in, day out. The minute Hamas, you know, decides to give up this imaginary struggle of theirs, which keeps the aid money flowing in and says, okay, we're going to sit at the table like big boys, then peace will break out very spontaneously.
Okay, go ahead, Mr. Becker. You wanted to comment.
Yes, I mean, the what happened between the two intifadas was an intensification of the settlement process, of the takeover of more and more land on the West Bank, of the building of roads that were only accessible to Jewish people. The military bases were everywhere. What's happened is a seizure of the Palestinian land, which is aimed by the Israeli government, which does not want peace. It wants the land. It has avoided every possibility to bring about a peaceful solution because the desire on the part of the Israeli leaders is to take over as much of the West Bank as possible. They are an expansionist apartheid state. Israel is an expansionist apartheid state.
I would like to comment on this assertion that Hamas is fully responsible and all they need to do is to recognize, you know, Israel's right to exist and renounce violence. And I would just like to ask the other gentleman why that isn't also true for Israel. Why doesn't Israel need to recognize the right of the Palestinian people to self-determination, which, by the way, that's the correct framework. There's no such thing as a right for a state to exist. It's a ridiculous framework. There's the right to self-determination, and that right is the right that's being denied by Israel to the Palestinian people, and not vice versa. So So this whole framework.
I'd be glad to answer you. Not at all. There is no right to have a government recognized. There is a right to self-determination, and I gladly welcome it. And I was in full support of the Palestinian elections, and I think they were generally free and fair. Not perfect, but generally speaking, free and fair. But with that comes responsibility. I don't think the Nazis were freely elected by the German people. That didn't make them any less abhorrent. If the Palestinian people, for whatever reason, decided to embrace a terrorist group, then they're responsible. That's part of what democracy is about. And again,
Israel is very happy to see Hamas decide
to drop terrorism and join the world community. They have decided
Israel is a terrorist state.
Government is responsible.
I would like to know how you define terrorism, because if that's the case, how do you not define the Israeli Defense Force as a terrorist organization?
Okay, I'm almost out of time. Wait a second, I'm almost out of time. Mr. Wolf, you made a comment that you feel for the Palestinian people in this situation, the people in Gaza. I want to understand, I'm trying to understand how that feeling of empathy turns into any food for the Palestinian people. Right now, as I said, 1.5 million people are there with very, very limited supplies. I'm getting back to the situation and asking you about collective punishment. What is the answer to this? How can the people get the supplies that they need in the interim after this more than three-week onslaught of the people?
Well, the Israelis have been letting the supplies in. As a matter of fact, the Israelis, I've never seen anything like this, at least in modern history that I know of, while a war is on, people letting humanitarian supplies in. I don't quite remember Churchill sending tea, jam, and cakes over to the Germans while they were bombing Dresden. Gaza, again, not to... To trivialize the situation there, it is very desperate, but it's also not quite the way the media have been portraying it. The death toll, as we're finding out, is not quite as extensive as people have said. Again, that doesn't, not to trivialize those
things. Okay, I'm sorry, Mr. Wolf, let me get Mr. Hammond, 20 seconds, final thoughts.
I don't know what to say. This is just an enormous crime, and the way the media is portrayed, I mean, he makes it sound like the media has been biased on the part, on the side of the Palestinians, which I think is ridiculous. I mean, the way the media has portrayed this.
Okay, and Mr. Becker, I'm sorry. Mr. Becker, 20 seconds. Go ahead, please.
Yes, yesterday the Israeli Navy stopped a Lebanese ship that was bringing food and medicine and toys. They declared it would be a violation of international law to let it go into Gaza. The Israelis have committed immense, incredible violations of international law.
On that note, I'm sorry, we're out of time. Thank you, guests, for being with us. And as always, thank you, viewers. See you next time on the next edition of Middle East Today. Good.